Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Today we have a special program. This is different than what we usually do, but it's a very important program, and I am very excited about doing this. We're in West Columbia, Texas, which is not too far from my home, and we are visiting with a gentleman by the name of Clark Woodson. And he came to my attention because he happens to be the great-great-grandson of a very important figure in Texas history. West Columbia is an important place for history. It happened to have been the very first capital for the Republic of Texas. Not for a long time, but it was the first capital. And there's a lot of Texas history around here. And now we're going to make some more history. We're going to interview a gentleman that has an interesting take on past history. There's been the plaque put up for his great-grandfather in honor of what he achieved in his lifetime. Now, the interesting thing about this is how his great-grandfather was able to overcome great odds. Clark, I want to thank you very much for allowing us to come visit with you and talk about your great-great-grandfather.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk about my great-grandfather. He was an amazing guy. It really was.
Wonderful. And I do have some questions, though, because it's so fascinating. Tell us why you're excited about it. I'm excited, and we came over here, and why there is a plaque. What is the big issue with your great-grandfather? Why is he significant, and why does he have an interesting story?
I think because of being an ex-slave in life and moving from Virginia, West Virginia, and moving to Texas, and to accumulate as much property and have three or four businesses, and I think it was very interesting, being the largest landowner of Brazoria County at one time, paying the most taxes, and being very generous with the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, to me, the fascinating story is that for 40 years, approximately, he was a slave. And then he had moved here during the Civil War, and of course, with emancipation, he was freed. And I've always argued the case that so many problems in our country is if we would just give people their freedom, you know, that maybe they could do better. Sometimes government's a heavy hand of government. And nobody could dramatize this better than your grandfather did. He became free, didn't know how to read or write, and like you said, he ended up owning a lot of his businesses. One of the richest men, I think he was at one time one of the richest men in all of Texas, and definitely the richest man for a while here in Brazoria County, the county where we're sitting right now.
It's amazing this how he was able to purchase all this property. That's why I don't understand. They say he came to Texas with money, so. Everyone's want to know, well, how much money and where did he get it from? But he came in and he just started buying up property. His wife, Isabella, she was at the time came in with the Dance family. I think they were in the manufacturing guns and gun company, and he worked for them on their plantation. And they start buying up property out in Danzig. The dance wanted to sell some property, and he said, this property is not good for anything. I said, the guy was talking to him, he was just started looking around at all the cedar trees. And they said, well, all these cedar trees are growing. It's some value here somewhere in this property. So he's been getting to buy up as much property as he could everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that was one of his first businesses. He bought that. He had cedar. He cut it down and shipped it down the river, and they were able to make furniture out of it. So he must have had a natural instinct for business. And you were kidding a little while ago that we were saying he didn't know how to read and write, but he knew his arithmetic.
Yeah, my aunt said he could really figure. Say, before you could figure with a pencil and paper that he would have it. He would have the question in his head just like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he got on into the cotton gin, a sugarcane mill, sawmill. The sawmill that cut down the cedar trees, they shipped cedar up to New York to wow. make furniture and stuff. Uh-huh. So he just had a grasp for getting the job done.
You know, there was one article written about him that I was fascinated with, the estimate of what he had to pay per acre of land. But that's back when a dollar was a dollar. It said that he could buy some acreage for 25 cents an acre. But that was all relative. He still had to earn it in order to buy the land.
Right. They purchased a lot of 25, 50 cents an acre, you know, but he still had to have the money. it took money to do things like that, and they said he had all races of people working in his cotton gin and his sugarcane mill. Said the community was just very happy and pleased with him because he was a very generous guy.
He was ecumenical before it was even cool to be. But you know, the other thing is when he had this sawmill and gristmill and all these things going on, then he hired a lot of people, but he didn't have to have customers. And they said most of his customers were white people. You know, so it just is so impressive that something could have been achieved back then, because just thinking about it, me personally, I think I'd have been rather despondent. Of course, it should please anybody if they get their freedom, but it is. How do I do it now? I'm 40 years old and I don't know how to ride, and I better, you know, find out somebody to give me some money or something. But he decided a different course.
You know, and after accumulating all this, it was amazing he was able to I understand. Hold on to all of it back in that time, you know.
Right.
So it was somebody he was working with, helping him, that he had a lot of trust in, that ever did the right thing mm-hmm. by him, you know. So it was just amazing.
You know, and I think that's an important word, trust in somebody. Because successful people usually have to have people they can trust. And we can make the assumption, since he didn't claim to read or write, he didn't have to have the attorneys writing up the contract. He had to trust somebody. They probably shook hands, and he had somebody that could trust him and maybe give him advice. But I would also think that he had to have been frugal. You even suggested as a slave, when he came here, he might have had some money. So maybe they were allowed to make a little bit of money, but maybe his idea was to save it, you know, and use it frugally. And it turned out that his investment turned out fantastic. But I think the great thing is the example he set. And that's why I was so interested in visiting with you, because I think we need more of that spirit, you know, that he exuded, you know, way back when the odds were against him. And my guess would be that he probably was a very positive person. That's what I would have to believe, you know, as a personality.
Yeah, I imagine he probably had a lot of setbacks, but evidently he didn't dwell on the setbacks. Yeah. He could say, well, I'm moving ahead, and he just kept moving and kept trying, and, you know, everything paid off. It was just, I'm not going to give up. And they tell a story that he had the first, it's kind of hard to believe, the first electricity in Brazoria County.
Wow.
His home was first telephone, first electricity. And that's, you know, it's kind of hard to believe that.
Yeah, so he was probably in his 40s during the Civil War, and he lived to be in his 90s and died in 1920. They consider him one of the wealthiest persons in Brazoria County and in Texas at the time. So it's a great example, I tell you.
Well, the Brown family is really proud of Charlie Brown, and my aunt, she never did tell me a whole lot about him, but she would always call him Papa. And she was just saying how loving he was and very generous, you know. Cause like I said, he built that home for her. And she was over a lot of his businesses and transactions later on in life. Mm-hmm. But I know she didn't start that because she was a child, but I don't know who helped him along. But
well, you know, this is a great story. And I want the audience to know, if they want to even read more, if they go to the internet, which most people will know how to do, and look up Charlie Brown in Texas, and there's been stories about him, and they're fascinating. But there's still a lot of things that you don't know about him, you know, exactly. And I think that there may be more people rooting around to find out more about his history and all. So this is great. But Clark, I want to thank you very much for visiting with us, because I think this is very positive. We want to send a nice message out there that we want people to be energetic and self-reliant, and this is just wonderful. And I think your point of the people that worked in his mills were from all races, you know, and he was a generous person and a very wealthy person. And I'm sort of convinced that if we could get some of the burdens and the heavy burdens of government off our shoulders, and slavery is obviously the heaviest burden that one could conceive of. Right. And instead of that being a difficult time for him, he just came alive. Right. And that to me is a wonderful thing. I do want to thank our audience for tuning in today. I think it's a fascinating story. And this to me, the strong message is that people, even when they have a tough time, if they are determined and willing to work and get ahead and be generous and loving, people can have a good life. I think that's what the story is all about. Charlie Brown. Thanks for tuning in today.